You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 71. Today is Thursday, September 1st, which means we are in the final month of regular season fantasy. And I'm here joined by Steve Gisuelli. Steve, thanks for filling in with Schwebzy. That was great last week. I'm back from Brazil, and I am freshly bounced from the playoffs in my all-important home league. So, you know, I'm on the other side of the anxiety and drama here, but I'm still plugged in. I got some other leagues in contention. So excited to talk about today's topic, looking at some of the call-ups with the expanded rosters. But I missed you, man. Great show. And yeah, Brazil was awesome, but good to be back talking baseball with you, Steve.
Yeah, it's great to have you back. I'm glad I don't have to botch the hosting duties like I did, or my excuse for what is hosting duties last week. But
you did a fine job navigating the transitions. That's really all it is the transition.
Yeah. Missed a few Twitter plugs here and there, but hey, what can you do? You know, I'm no Van Burnett, that's for sure. But glad to have you back. Glad to talk baseball again. Doesn't feel right during the regular season if we don't have our weekly chat. So it's good to have you back. Glad South America was good. Sorry to hear about your home league, but you know, obviously it's tough whenever you get eliminated from, like, you know, your most important league. But there's almost like a sigh of relief, right? Like, you know, like when it's over, there's like a weight that's lifted. Obviously, you want that to be as late as possible and ideally winning a championship. But hey, you know, fantasy baseball is hard. That's why we're doing this and trying to, you know, look for every advantage that we can find.
Yeah, it's so true. Like now I'm taking my talents to the golf course to work on my irons and unfortunately dreading some fantasy football research for this like obligated league that I'm in. But yes, you're right, Steve. And it's fine. I view making the playoffs in a head-to-head league as kind of the benchmark. And as long as you're doing that, it means you're kind of checking, you're active. So it's a good spot. And you, I believe, are still alive, right? You got a little crunch playoff matchup going on right now?
Oh, yeah. Still alive. First round of the playoffs. Got the 4 seed. Was in a battle for a potential 1 seed and a bye. But it was really tight in the top of our league. So just trying to scrape through and win. You know, we have 14 categories, win 7-6. That's it. My team's been pretty good, you know, had some struggles, but I feel like I've found ways to like scrape out wins, and that's all you need to do in a head-to-head playoff. So hoping that's the case there. Still doing well in the On the Wire league, hosted by Adam Howe, the host of On the Wire on the Pitcherless Podcast Network, and our boss at the podcast network and Pitcher List. So that team's in first and actually going for the overall there. There's like a 80 teams, I think, around there. So have a good result there. So yeah, in contention, some leagues doing okay in turf, that the World League, you know, the turf, barf, all those regional fantasy leagues. Fourth, I think, in that, like fourth or fifth. So want a respectable finish in there. There's a bunch of industry guys in there. Matt Williams with the two L's are 7 on Twitter, organizes or is the commissioner of the Turnpike area fantasy league. So like the New York, New Jersey, Philadelphia area. So want a respectable finish in that, which is nice. But yeah, excited for the home stretch and, you know, pumped for the playoffs. Like it's still a good baseball time, September, even though we're winding down and we kind of dread the finish of it and hope for spring once it starts to get cold, but that's still a little while away.
Yeah, definitely. And, we'll keep tabs on it, Steve. I think it's important to just, you know, keep the spirit of why we're in this in the first place. We won't spend too much time on it, but it's also good for our fans to know that you got credentials here. We're at least going to get you in the top 6 in your league if you follow some of our advice. But Steve, the Twitter plugs that I missed is any of our viewers, if you guys have been with us this long, hopefully you know, but give us a follow on Twitter at WinsAbovePod. I'm at Van_verified and Steve is at Stav8818. As always, you guys can write into the show, winsabovefantasy@gmail.com. We're not too far away from kind of having the postseason wrap-up content. So if you guys have any topics you'd like to recap, why is Acuña not hitting for power, things of that nature that I'm clearly losing sleep over, just write us in and we'll be sure to get it on the show. But otherwise, we'd love if you guys could give us a rating and review. But as always, we appreciate you guys spending your Thursdays with us. So let's get into it, Steve. September call-ups. We had kind of a pivot on our show topic this week, and for good reason. I think we were both thinking, let's be actionable, let's think about ads. But then a deeper theme is within the ads, there's a lot of guys getting called up, and it's like that, you know, stir crazy youth comes up and you got to add them quick if they're worth it, because we've seen it with guys like Vaughn Grissom, you know, Vinny P when he was healthy, Michael Harris II. It can happen fast. And man, we've got a nice list of about 12 names here that we're going to get into. Mostly batters, a few pitchers sprinkled in there. But Steve, talk to me about just this time of year and in general, some of the names that we're talking about, or just advice that you have this late in the season to get an edge.
Yeah, it's officially September call-up day, right? On September 1st, rosters expand by two. I think teams can add one pitcher, so it can't be both pitchers. So they can't just like boost up their bullpen fully. And I think that changed, what, in 2019 or even last year, was it? I forget, but it used to be that the rosters expanded to like, what, like 40, I think you could have, or some ridiculous number.
Yeah, 40.
Maybe. And basically everyone would come up, or anyone who, you know,
was someone.
Yeah, was someone came up, and there were probably a more quantity of prospects that came up. But I think because the rosters were so big and there were so many spots and, you know, additional playing time to go around, that it might be better for fantasy purposes now that it's just two, because like, right, like they're just going to call up the one guy that's going to play, you know, like we've seen with the Orioles, with the what they did with Gunnar Henderson. We'll get into him, and Corbin Carroll, even though it was a little bit earlier than the official September 1 call up day, but there's less mouths to feed, kind of, is what I'm saying. So I think it's kind of more important to pay attention to the names and the teams that come up. Sure, there's going to be some starters and relievers that'll be used by teams in contention to, you know, help the bullpen and give a rest to some starters, things like that. But there's still some guys on contending teams and non-contending teams that now have this roster spot that's available, and there's still, you know, 25, 28 games left for most teams. With the late start to the season, it's a condensed schedule, so there's not as many off days. So there's still a decent chunk of season left. So enough time to make an impact for sure. So some guys that definitely could help you in the last month, whether that's roto or head-to-head, right? There's still plenty of time to make up ground and to win your matchups.
Yeah, and I think most of these guys – You're gonna be aware that they got the call, and like I said, you got to kind of act fast. So I think the other side of it, Steve, and curious on your thoughts about this, but there's kind of an evaluation that who is the player we're looking at, but also what's kind of the immediate impact they can make, because sometimes we do have a tendency to overreact or kind of look at things with the rose-colored glasses and say, oh, this could happen. But we've also seen kind of the prospect burn on some quick ads. So I think maybe that's just kind of the level of a healthy skepticism, I guess, to really evaluate like the, you know, the playing time, the potential you can get from other people that are most likely on the wire. So I think this is a great list of names. If not as, you know, every one of them is like an ad, at least ones to basically help people understand what to make of some of these call-ups, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's, you kind of nailed it. It's trying to find that balance. Like, not everyone is going to come up and hit the ground running, and not every single September call-up is going to have fantasy impact, right? Even if they do have the playing time. So it's kind of, you know, navigating it how you would navigate any other ads at this time of the year, right? It's it's churn and burn. You got to be ready to drop someone at a drop of a dime in redraft, right? Like anyone at this point is droppable. You know, if you don't have IL spots and you can't, you're in a head-to-head matchup and McClanahan's going to miss 2 weeks, like, you know, you got to move on. Like if you need a start and you don't have the space or whatever, like it's that time of year. So you have to be actionable. You have to give these guys a shot, right? Like especially the bigger names that we'll talk about here. But also be cognizant of the fact that like, hey, maybe they're not playing Carroll as much as we thought they would. You know, you don't really have time to wait just for them to figure it out. So you kind of got to put it under a microscope and be quick to react. Even if that does mean you're going to miss like a hot week at the end of September, but you might not be surviving until the last week of September, you know? So, it's about finding that balance.
Well, let's get into it. Let's talk about Corbin Carroll. He's one that we outlined a month or two back as just when it happens, you're going to want to rush to add. And it's no secret in the industry. Carroll, of course, the outfielder for the Diamondbacks, number three MLB prospect, gets promoted as a refresher in AAA. His slash line was .287. 4.08, so a huge jump on the walks and I guess the plate discipline, and a .535 slug. And those numbers looked even better at AA, which makes sense, but it's just not a fluke. This is how good this guy is. 31 steals in just 91 games across high minors there. So Carroll comes in with a monster prospect pedigree, Steve. Obviously, speed is what jumps off the page. Is this must add everywhere? Talk to me about what your thoughts are on Carroll. I know his rostership, probably of every name we have on the list here, is the highest and is rising the fastest. So I think this is one that it seems like everyone is aware of. And it's like, if he's still out there now, you kind of rush to add, right?
Yeah, even with just the two games and he's off, he was first a lefty tonight and isn't playing. In NFBC leagues where you can't add a guy until they actually play a game, those first two games are probably going to be enough to have people throw whatever budget is left in any NFBC league at Corbin Carroll. You know, he had he's 3-for-10 already. He has like 5 RBIs, hit a ball like 440 feet that didn't leave the park somehow because of that tall wall in center field in Arizona. I don't know if you saw the video, but there was a sprint feed of him scoring from first on a double from Alec Thomas where he hit like the top sprint speed in the league already. Like, you know, wow. All the tools have been on display in just the two games that he's played already. So yeah, he's a must add basically anywhere. You know, the speed is ridiculous. It might be like the peak end comp for me that comes to mind is like Trey Turner. Maybe he has more power because I don't know if Turner ever hit, 24 homers or 23 homers combined in a year in the minors. That the power sort of developed a little bit later for Turner and in the majors. Carroll was in two very, very hitter friendly environments. That being said, it was a .330 ISO at AA in 58 games and a .248 ISO in AAA in 33 games. And, you know, was 66% better than league average in AA, 35% better than league average in AAA. And, you know, being in those hitter friendly environments, WRC plus, the numbers that I just used for the league averages does take that into account. Like, right. It's like why Rockies hitters always have a low WRC plus because it takes into account how hitter friendly Coors Field is and, you know, negates that essentially. So to be that good in hitter friendly environments is super impressive. I'd add Carroll in basically any league, no matter how shallow.
Yeah. The element of Carroll I wasn't as familiar with was that I guess the power, when I saw the 23 homers in the minors this year, I was like, oh man, is he, so he's really like 30-30. For some reason I had him pegged as kind of like 15-20, and kind of a ceiling, 15-20 homers and then sky's the limit on like, you know, 50 steals. but I'm watching the Power closely rest of the way just because I didn't expect that it would be this big of an output with, you know, the ISO being 330 at AA, 248 in AAA. So do you think, I mean, if it looks good from here on in, just out of curiosity, Steve, do you think this is top five, top six rounds next year with the speed he has and the plate discipline and everything?
Think about where Bobby Witt went without ever playing a game in the majors. I know there was it was a 30-30 minor league season, right, for Witt last year, but Carroll definitely would have came close to that at least if he stayed in the minors this last month. I think it's going to be at the floor is where Bobby Witt went, which is what, like at his
90s, 100.
He even creeped up, I think, to like the fourth, fifth round. So, you know, I guess, yeah, in a 14 team, 15 team league, it'll be around 60, 75 as a floor. But like if he has a great September, it'll be like the third round. Like the hype will be just out of control if he hits like four homers, steals six bases, and hits like 270, right? Like it'll be,
yeah,
the hype will be insurmountable. Like I don't know if I would have any Carroll shares next year if that's the case, but it could be that crazy, especially with like the success of Witt and Julio Rodriguez, right? Like it seems like there's like a cycle with these prospects, right? Like Kelnick was slow to start and didn't work as that high investment. So like Julio wasn't hyped up, and you know, I know Witt was, but there wasn't as much of a track record, and like, was he going to get called up? So it seems like it's like when there's ultra successes like Witt and Julio, people think that it's like it's cyclical. Like they think it's going to happen again. Like of course, right, Carroll isn't going to fall on his face, or you know, if Carroll does fall on his face and ends up like getting sent down, I don't think that'll happen. But maybe, you know, I didn't think that would happen, right, with Kelnick either. Then next year's prospects will be like, let's wait on this. It's funny
push
how
it
that
down.
Works.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Oh man. Well, let's move to the next one, which is the number two MLB prospect, and you mentioned Gunnar Henderson. I don't know his the full game line, Steve, but I saw his first MLB hit was a home run today as we record this on Wednesday. It was all over. If you guys haven't seen the clip, an absolute bomb. Lost the helmet, had the lettuce.
The flow
running around the bases. Yeah, it's great. So Henderson is, I believe he was kind of, he came up as kind of a natural shortstop, but it looks like he's going to be playing third for Baltimore, which that eligibility will be welcome, if not the rest of this season, definitely next year as well. Gunnar Henderson, another great slash line at AAA, 288 average, 389 OBP, and a 504 slug. So there seems like, you know, similar power speed combo here. In 112 games across the minors this season, 19 home runs, 22 steals. So another guy who's kind of flirting with that 30-30 scenario, Steve. Talk to me about Gunnar Henderson, kind of rest of season. And, of course, since we just talked about Carroll, maybe how these two kind of stack up in your mind.
Another 80 grade baseball name, right? Like Gunnar Henderson, there's no way this guy could be bad, right? Yeah, and speaking of the position flexibility, they did have him on the right side of the infield too the last few weeks. He played a few games at second and even some at first. So that could be interesting. I know Yahoo has some light eligibility. Fantrax does too, or more custom. So if he can get some games over there too, that could be really interesting and nice for some position eligibility for next year at least. But yeah, like this is another one, like the Julio Rodriguez and Bobby Witt of 2022, it's Corbin Carroll and Gunnar Henderson for 2023. I actually was stashing Corbin Carroll and Gunnar Henderson in my minor slots, in my home league, and they got called up literally for the playoffs. So hopefully they'll carry me to victory there in my home league, but, we'll see. Henderson did have a a nice homer today. I was watching it live, was pretty excited. Had another hit, so he was 2 for 4 today.
Nice.
But,
and he's batting a little bit higher up in the order. Yeah, for I think what
he was 6th. Yeah. But and the O's are good, right? Like, their offense has been pretty good all year. I mean, he should take Odor's playing time. I think they'll slide Urias over the second, have Mateo at short. And who knows? Mountcastle's been streaky. I think he broke like an 0 for 20 or something today. And who knows if they get Gunnar Henderson over the first, or was more just okay, let's see if he can actually do it to be a backup on the depth chart if needed. But yeah, I mean, Carroll and Henderson, I think they're ads basically everywhere.
So do you think this is like they're playing 3 out of every 4 games, 5 out of every 6? Like, I think the volume might be the only thing in question. I know it's kind of crystal ball.
I think Henderson will play most games. Like, the O's are in a playoff race for their life. Like, they need him. Like, they can't be running Rougned Odor and his, 60 WRC plus out there every day. Right. So they need him. They need to win every game. They have a bunch of games with the Blue Jays who they're chasing in September. So I think Henderson will play every day. Carroll, there is a bit of a squeeze in the outfield, because they have Alec Thomas. They have Dalton Varsho, who plays a lot out there. Jake McCarthy has been really, really good. A guy that I think we might have talked about on a few episodes back. I'm hoping we did, because he's been great as a source of speed and been hitting well for the Diamondbacks. So and Stone Garrett too. There's quite a bit of mouths to feed in Arizona, and they've been a lot better recently too as an offense. They're like no longer a bottom feeder offense. So not that they're a great team or anything like that, but they've been better offensively. Carroll is sitting versus a lefty today, so I think Carroll may sit a little bit more just because Diamondbacks don't have that much to play for, where Henderson, those need this man. So, like, it's all system go with that.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be both great names to watch, even for redraft next year, but I think rush to add on both of these is the consensus. We're going to talk about a pitcher and get into more batters, but first we're going to take a real quick ad break, and we'll be right back.
Hey, Alex Fast here, and thanks for listening to this podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. If you're a fan, consider supporting all of us by getting a PL Plus subscription, where you're going to get an ad-free website and get access to our Discord, where you can talk to all of our podcast hosts and staff. Plus, you can hang out with our incredible Pitcher List community. It's basically a baseball sanctuary year-round for as low as $8 a month. You can sign up at pitcherlist.com/plus, and you're going to get your first month free with promo code podcast. Also, don't forget to check out everything else we do as well, from YouTube videos, live streams, newsletters, off-season articles, TikToks, breakdowns, over 15 baseball podcasts on our network. We can't stop talking about baseball, even during the off-season. So sign up for PL Plus today at pitcherlist.com/plus and use promo code podcast to get your first month free. All right, thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show.
All right, Steve, so let's talk about Hunter Brown with the Astros. Of course, the Verlander news, also a major bummer, is we're kind of getting a little pop-up of a handful of pitcher injuries. So Hunter Brown, I think the natural reaction is, oh, well, he could slot in there. But Christian Javier is already set for his next start, and it kind of brings into question what Hunter Brown's, I guess, rotation or involvement will be with the Astros. But in terms of the pitcher himself, he's got a good fastball slider curveball combination, 2.55 ERA, a 1.08 whip with 134 strikeouts and 106 innings this year at AAA. So love the pitcher, love kind of the long term with Hunter Brown. But what do you see kind of under the hood? Anything in terms of analysis, or what are we thinking for kind of prospects of playing time and how Hunter Brown could help fantasy managers down the stretch?
I am really, really excited for Hunter Brown in 2023. His last start at AAA, or start, it was a bulk appearance out of the bullpen, so they're getting him used to that. And like you said, the Astros have had sort of a rotation crunch kind of all year. So they had a 6-man before Verlander went down, and Javier pitched today, went back into his slot. I know he pitched out of the bullpen over the weekend, so there were some question marks there. But Javier was pretty good today. I think he had like 8 strikeouts in 5 innings. So I don't see, you know, especially if Verlander's only this minimum stay, which I think they kind of expect it to be, unless there's another injury or they want to somehow do a 6-man if they have like a 6 or 7 game week coming up. I know the Astros were light on games this week. I think they only have 5. So doesn't fit immediately, but hey, if he gets announced that he's starting any game, like I would rush to add him. Derek Van Riper on the Athletic Fantasy Baseball podcast mentioned that like this looks a lot similar to Spencer Strider, just like the most ridiculous K stuff in the minors. Mm-hmm. High walk rate, but like, you know, he's got that 108 whip, and that comes with like a 10.6% walk rate. So if he's walking that many batters, wow, like that just goes to show how few hits he's giving up. He doesn't give up any homers. It's only 0.42 homers per 9. So he's got nasty, nasty stuff. Like probably the best strikeout rate in the minors, or, you know, strikeout guy in the minors, not the best strikeout rate, but as far as like top end strikeout stuff for a starter in the minors, I think, you know, it's hard to argue anyone's better than Hunter Brown. So I like it a lot. Like, sure, you know, this would be, if you have like a weekly fab, like this is the week to throw it on him because he's not a starter. So maybe the price will be a little bit lower, and you never know. They might need to throw him in there. He's just one spot start away needed for the Astros to be in there, at least for the next 2 weeks with Verlander gone. So he's got the stuff. I like it a lot.
Yeah, and if they're trying to bring him along as kind of a postseason weapon, they're definitely going to want to get him some reps. So I think, again, in like weekly head-to-head matchups, it's not rocket science. Most of you guys are probably looking at like, you know, the volume-based stuff, two-start pitchers and everything. If you need, you know, we joke around and call it like the underworld, but if you're not going for the volume and you're trying to play in the underworld of like just protecting ratios, not giving up home runs or losses or anything for your categories, Hunter Brown, it seems like, could be a really good like 3 to 4 innings a week ratio and help with strikeouts as well. So I really like it. The only thing, like you mentioned, Steve, is like the 11% walk rate maybe suggests there's going to be a little volatility. But if he's just striking out the yard and giving up ground balls outside of that, 54% like, ground ball rate is
like
terrific.
It's like the Dylan Cease profile, right?
Yes, exactly. Yep. So
and the Astros have done this so many times, like, right? Like Javier came up as a reliever, now he's a starter. You know, even like McCullers, I think, at least during their World Series run, was a reliever for that time. So this is kind of their specialty.
Yeah, I love it. So Hunter Brown, I think, is a thumbs up as well for us. Now let's move to a name we were talking about plenty in the preseason, Steve, in Tristan Casas for the Boston Red Sox first baseman. We were talking about him as a handcuff for Bobby Dalbec. And Casas has done nothing but hit when he's been out there for AAA in 69 games. Slash lines 271, 385 OBP, 478 slug. So again, in just 69 games, 10 home runs, a really good plate discipline with the 15% walk rate, a 21% strikeout rate is, you know, solid. And I think that right away, if he gets the call, would be a really savvy add for OBP leagues. Now, the question, I guess, becomes, we haven't heard the news yet on Casa. So if it does happen, do we think that he immediately gets into that same type of playing time that we were talking about with like Corbin Carroll, where it's like 3 out of every 4 games or 4 out of every 5? Talk to me about kind of the player analysis, Steve, and the prospectus for how it could help managers.
Yeah, just to be clear, as of this recording, Carroll's the first, or Casas is the first guy that we talked about that hasn't been announced as an official September call up. Obviously, Carroll and Gunnar Henderson are already up. Hunter Brown's been announced that he's being called up on the first. Casas, this is the first speculation player that we have on this list. But the reason why I added it is that Steve Hewitt tweeted about Alex Cora's spot on WEEI in Boston, that Alex Cora said that there is a chance that Casas will be called up in September. So not official. It'll be tomorrow when rosters expand, but I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case. Said it's one of the names that he discussed. He's saying, not saying it's tomorrow in 2 weeks, but he believes there's a chance he'll be a part of it in September. And Casas has been really good of late at AAA. So there's been some rough spots for him. I know he came up and wasn't great. It was just a 9-game sample where he got 33 at-bats, 42 plate appearances. But, you know, it's not like he struck out a bunch. It was a 19% strikeout rate against a 19% walk rate, which is pretty impressive. You know, excuse me. That was his AAA numbers last year. So, am I right that Casas came up for a hot second this year?
I had him in some best balls. I don't remember.
Yeah,
he was up, but I might have missed it. I might have missed it.
But regardless, 128 WRC plus with a respectable strikeout rate of just 22%, sitting for more power recently, and those numbers have been really, really good recently. So the Red Sox can use them. They're just in an absolute free fall, and I don't see why not. You know, they need something to go right from this year to head into next year because their slim playoff chances are basically dropping by the second.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think that's the first watch list one, but yeah, that's a profile we're all excited about and definitely one that we'll be keeping tabs on in the spring next offseason. Might be kind of in that Spencer Torkelson range next year of kind of the deeper hype after some of the names that everyone's going to reach for. So like it for Casas, but we'll keep an eye on it. Then going back to pitchers, Steve, Ken Waldichuk, who just came over to Oakland from the Yankees in the Frankie Montas trade, he's also been announced that he is going to be promoted. I believe he's in line to start today, as our listeners are listening to this, so Thursday against the Nationals. Great first start for him. So if you're in same-day transaction leagues, might be some streamer interest here, Steve. What do you see with Waldichuk? It seems like his name is being put alongside Hunter Brown in a lot of like the Twitter searches and everything because they're both kind of those toolsy upside pitchers that might have some opportunity in the next few days. So Waldichuk, what are your thoughts, Steve?
Yeah, I like it. I mean, I would add him over Brown just because he's actually starting and has this great matchup versus the Nats today as this podcast comes out. It's interesting. I know we've gotten on Oakland for sort of the teardown that they did, but they are pretty good at, they don't develop talent on their own, but they're pretty good at acquiring, you know, nearly developed talent and guys that might be underrated, and actually contribute, especially on the pitching end, right? Like, you know, they did a great job with Bassett, Cole Irvin this year comes to mind. So, you know, who knows, maybe they see something in him and he's a little bit better than we think. Not that he wasn't a decent prospect, or in his own right, but, you know, 24 years old, right. You know, obviously just really close to the majors, when they acquired him. So basically ready to go. A big lefty, you know, it's really interesting. The Fangraphs has his fastball at 60 grade, his changeup at 60 grade. So, two plus pitches, nice to have the fastball as a plus pitch on the scouting end. And, you know, another one that's got a good strikeout rate in 47 innings in AAA, a 34% strikeout rate. The walk rate was a little high. He's actually trimmed it down when he came to Oakland in his 18 innings that he's pitched there, just at 3.8%. So that's encouraging. I like it. I would absolutely stream him if he's available, for sure. And then if it goes well, it's one of those things that you can say, hey, maybe I have something here for the last month.
Mm-hmm. The little bit of cold water is the next start after this one. He would be lined up for the Braves in Oakland, at least. And then, but then after that, at Texas. So, you know, kind of some bad, some good. But yeah, I think at this point in the season, you're looking for any kind of hope on pitchers that you can add. And I think, or starters that you can add. And I think Waldichuk is a good one. If you have the luxury of, you know, a deep bench and you don't have to roll them out for that start against the Braves, I think two of the next three would be a thumbs up for Waldichuk. And you just don't know what, you know, how his stuff is going to play up. So solid numbers in the minors, and I think reason to be excited, plus that home park as well. So let's move to another.
He's never had a swing strike rate below 15% in the minors. Any full stop. So it's been 14% in the 18 innings in Oakland, but still, that's still pretty good. I mean, he would have to pitch really, really good versus the Nationals for me to even consider starting him versus the Braves, but at least it's at home. And yeah, I would add him, sit him for the Braves start, and then all systems go for the rest.
Yep. And moving to another favorable home park with the Rockies is the call-up Michael Toglia, if I'm saying that right. First baseman. This is a large human being, Steve. 6'5", 60 grade power. And he has been on fire in his last 17 games at AAA. Before that, at AA is a little bit more of an accurate picture, it seems like, given the hit tools much lower. In the 100 games at AA, he's 234 average, 329 OBP, and a 466 slug. Michael Toglia, the Rockies are kind of doing stuff similar to the A's, where they blew it up, but they've got a lot of movement. We'll talk about another Rocky in a little bit. But what do we think about Toglia? Is this somebody you're interested in for some potential power help down the stretch?
Switch hitter with pop in Coors Field, like, you know, as hard as it is for the Rockies to even develop anyone, it seems like Toglia might be someone that could be it. I mean, he's got 30 home runs this year in the minors. He homered tonight, actually, off Kenley Jansen, a two-run homer in his last at-bat of the ninth. So that's nice to see. Mm-hmm. You know, it's skeptical. I was talking about it in the Discord with someone today. He tagged him as kind of like pre-breakout Nate Lowe potential, which isn't exciting. Like Nate Lowe before basically June of this year was a really frustrating player that, you know, kind of just hit the ball hard on the ground. You know, I could see that with Toglia because before this year, he really didn't have an OPS above 800 except for in low A. So that's surprising for someone that this big, that, you know, has hit 17 home runs in 74 games at high A in 2021, but it's still an OPS less than 800 and just 11% better than league average. So it's kind of a confusing profile. He does strike out a bit, but he also knows how to take a walk. You know, I think maybe I'm more optimistic. I think that maybe he could be what Nate Lowe is this year, and a switch hitter in Coors Field with pop. I'm keeping an eye on it. Probably more for, you know, maybe if he does do well and it goes a little under the radar, maybe more for 2023. But hey, a homestand and a Rocky hitter available in Coors, like I would definitely stream it for some home games at least.
Mm-hmm. He's got a series in Cincinnati and then the Brewers in Colorado and then the Diamondbacks in Colorado. So
there you go. That's a great stretch. So I would definitely be adding Toglia for a week at least just to maybe catch lightning in the bottle and get some good matchups.
So a different shaped one here, Steve, is Spencer Torkelson, who is back up after what was a really brutal 83-game stretch where he hit just 197. The OPS was shy of 600, and it just wasn't the season overall. I remember early on the projection systems were going wild for Torkelson. I was joking around about, you know, his Lou Gehrig projections from some of the systems, and it just didn't work out for Torkelson. It's not to say we're writing him off forever, and I think at his age and just this, you know, basically a half season, it's not enough for us to give up on him. So is there reason for some optimism that Torkelson, while everyone's kind of looking left at all these young players, or I guess prospect call-ups, Torkelson is kind of the post-hype production bargain? What do you think on Torkelson?
It's hard to get excited about him because after he got sent down after that abysmal 83-game stint in the majors, he's produced exactly 100 WRC+. So nothing great. He struck out 27% of the time, but did walk 14% of the time. That's kind of in line with what he did in the minors at previous stops. So a little bit elevated on the K rate. But, you know, a stretch like that at the MLB level, like that's hard to come back from. But what does have me somewhat excited is Trevor Huth. He used to podcast and work for Pitcherless. He's now over at Bless You Boys and covers prospects for Prospects Live. So the prospects, and specifically Detroit Tiger prospects, are exactly his things. He did have a tweet in late August about Torkelson's adjusted stance, where he kind of quieted his hands. So who knows? Maybe that's the adjustment that he needed to break through. So it'll be interesting. More of a watch list guy for me. Definitely not giving up on Torkelson long term or anything like that, but will be interesting to see. Like, I hope Detroit just plays him every day. Like, they're horrible and they shouldn't block him or anything like that. So we'll keep an eye on it, and maybe that adjustment that Trevor Huth pointed out unlocks something here.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's another watchless guy. So we got kind of a few there with Tristan Casas, Michael Toglia, and Spencer Torkelson. This next one, Steve, is a little hard to make sense of if it's an act fast or put on the watch list. And it's Miguel Vargas, who I know we love. We were talking about him, you know, almost ever since June. And, you know, the when will Vinny Pasquantino get called up account shifted over to Vargas. And I think we just love this player. I mean, he's been so good in the minors, a 304 average, 404 OBP, so a full 100 up is always what you want to see there. And then a 511 slug, 17 yep. homers, 16 steals. Like, I want this guy, and I'm not, you know, I'm not even a Dodgers guy. I actively kind of root against the Dodgers, but Vargas feels different to me. I just love the player, and I pounced when he got called up earlier this season, and it ended up being kind of a tease where it was just like two games out of five when he was called up, and then they sent him right back down. Now he's getting called up again, Steve, and the Dodgers approaching playoffs. Bellinger the past 2 weeks, OPS under 650. Same goes with Muncy. That said, a lot of mouths to feed. What do we think here with Vargas? Because if he does play, it is an absolute must add, but it's really tough to make sense of kind of what his value in production will be, big picture. What are your thoughts?
You stole the thought right out of my head, man. Bellinger is the path to playing time here. Chris Taylor has been banged up and not as good since he's been on the IL too. So there is some potential, like if Vargas catches fire, for him to carve out a role. And despite the Dodgers always having that many mouths to feed, like, they somehow always do it, right? There was always questions like, oh, where's Muncy going to play? Like, what? They figure it out. Like, mm-hmm. they get guys in the lineup, and, you know, Vargas has played some first. He's played some outfield, so, you know, they could shuffle things around. I think he even played some third.
I thought I heard second or third in the minors. Yeah. But, yeah, point taken. They're trying to get him reps, like, everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. So if it – who knows? It just takes one day for them to say, all right, that's it. We're done with trying to figure out Bellinger, and they're just not going to play him rather than just bat him like eighth or ninth in the order for them to open up a spot for Vargas. So It sounds like you're going to have a lot of shares of Vargas in 2023, at least, which I love. I'm glad that's the case. I'll probably be right there with you, but I'm cautiously optimistic to see if they actually get him some playing time. But, you know, a 300, 400, 500 slash line, like, that's the dream. And at any level, that's impressive. And Vargas is probably one of the best all around hitters just in the minors, period.
Totally agree. I think it's, if you have the luxury of having bench bats, I would say it's worth the shot because of what you said, that the Dodgers tend to, you know, work these situations out, the whole life finds a way thing. If you don't, and all your bench spots are taken up by pitchers, I think in that case, you kind of have to wait just because of what happened last time with Vargas. So I think that's the diagnosis. But yeah, we'll be talking plenty about him in the offseason, Steve, and might be one of the earliest names of 2023 WAF favorites. So we'll stay tuned on what Vargas does from here on in. Moving to Milwaukee, outfielder Garrett Mitchell has gotten the call, and this guy's a speedster with the 70 grade speed, also 60 grade power. So right away got your attention with kind of the power speed combo. In his recent 20 games at AAA, a 342 average, 435 OBP, and a 466 slug with 9 steals in those 20 games. So I think you're definitely getting the speed here. I wouldn't expect the average to be that high. It was never that high in AA. He homered on Monday, Steve, but the pop hasn't really been there throughout the minors. He's hitting ninth for the Brewers. That offense needs all the help it can get. What are we thinking here for Mitchell? Just kind of a specialist if you need some speed, or where are you at with Garrett Mitchell?
Yeah. What interests me the most is that, like, the Brewers have just constantly needed some sort of offense and outfielder particularly. So there might be more opportunity, even though Mitchell might not have the best tools and skill of anyone that we've talked about so far. But the power and speed is interesting. He's already chipped in the steal too. So yeah, it might come with a tough average that's, you know, below 250, maybe even like a 220, 230. But if he's going to give you an occasional homer and steal, that's extremely, extremely valuable down the stretch run. So if he gets an extended look in playing time, this might be a nice, you know, while everyone's clamoring over Vargas and Carroll and Henderson, you know, throw a backup in on Garrett Mitchell, and you might be get, you know, 60 to 70% of their product, of those guys' production, if they do produce like we're producing. But Mitchell seems like a guy that could at least help you in homers and speed, at the very least, with a significant playing time, just because Milwaukee needs it.
And a decent stream stretch coming up here with, we mentioned earlier, but at the Diamondbacks for a 4-game series, and then in Colorado at Coors after that. So that's enough to kind of stream and see what happens if you need the help. And after that, they have the Giants. But at that point, maybe we'll have a decent look at what Mitchell's bringing to the table. Speaking of Coors, the second Rocky that we wanted to talk about was Sean Bouchard. And a little bit older of a prospect here, Steve, at 26. First base and outfield eligible, I believe. And I'm kind of interested in this one. For as little as I had heard about Bouchard, I really like the plate discipline that he's got. And in 70 games at AAA this year, batting 300, a 635 slug, 20 homers, 12 stolen bases. So this one kind of has my attention as kind of a late bloomer prospect here for the Rockies. Do you have thoughts on this? I'm kind of looking at this and wondering, like, why isn't there a little bit more made of Sean Bouchard here? But maybe I'm missing something.
Yeah, I mean, he's a 26-year-old and playing in, you know, where's the Colorado's AAA? I think it's like Albuquerque, like an extremely hitter-friendly environment. But that being said, you know, under 23% strikeout rate, walked 14% of the time. You know, could be a late bloomer here. Like, I'm trying to think of a comp. Like, I know Charlie Blackmon was like a late bloomer, but that might not be fair. But, you know, a late pop-up power speed kind of guy. Like, I don't know. Like, maybe this could be like a
Rafael Ortega.
Yeah, someone to get a little bit more excited about. I was thinking Adelis Garcia, but he was a little different since he played in Cuba, has more swing and miss and less, you know, plate discipline. But regardless, you know, it doesn't take much for me to get excited about Colorado Rockies hitters. And, you know, an OPS that starts with one and a dot is impressive no matter where it is. So even if you are a 26-year-old in Triple A and a hitter friendly environment. So I know he got a run with the Rockies earlier. He didn't play much and then got hurt. That was cut short. So, you know, the Rockies should just play Toglia and him and Bouchard every day. I doubt they will because they're the Rockies and they're dumb. But you never know. At least they're up. So those Triple A numbers are really, really impressive. And, you know, 12 steals with that's just crazy. I mean, he's had 22 steals, but that was at high A back in 2018. So never really had this sort of power and really broke out this year. Definitely a watch list for me. And speaking of the streams, the Reds and the Rock, and then going back home, definitely would stream Bouchard and Toglia for those series.
Yeah, I think it's a good one and kind of a sneaky one. Anytime, and over the 70 games, it's been a 14% walk rate and just a 22.4% strikeout rate, which is the lowest he's had across the minors. So I'm interested. I've got no beef with the late bloomers here if they're coming with the plate discipline like that and hitting in cores. So interesting one there for Sean Bouchard. That's S-E-A-N, and then Bouchard is B-O-U-C-H-A-R-D. So that kind of wraps up our Coors guys there. Let's talk about catcher for the Astros, Steve, Yanner Diaz. And this is a guy that at a weak position looks like he could really help teams if he gets the playing time opportunity. His slash line across 48 games at AAA, a .294 average, .342 OBP, and a .587 slug. Was very productive at AA before that with an .870 OPS. 25 homers across 100 games in the minors. This has to get our attention at the catcher position. But do you think there's playing time here? Will this be kind of a, you know, two out of every five games? I mean, what are we making of Diaz here with the Astros? Because almost everyone can always use help at catcher.
Yeah, it's not encouraging that he did he actually get called up yet, or is he coming up Tuesday or tomorrow with Hunter Brown?
I thought it was tomorrow.
Okay, because he hasn't played yet. That would be concerning. But, you know, the Astros do have Christian Vasquez, who's been, you know, fine as an offensive catcher that they acquired at the deadline. But yeah, Maldonado is just not doing anything offensively. Not that they have him there for that. He is a good game caller and has a good arm and throws out base runners and is a good defensive catcher and all that. But I don't know. It's interesting. Maybe they're trying to see if they could catch fire in the bottle, like sort of an MJ Melendez type thing. That's like the vibe that I'm getting for him. You know, with that power from this position, maybe he'll even steal a few games at DH just because Jordan Alvarez, ever since that hand injury, just has not been the same. I know he sat today and really has not hit for much power ever since he had that IL stint before the All-Star break with that hand injury. So maybe it's insurance that way. With that kind of pop, I'm sure they'll want to at least see what they have for the playoffs here. You know, it might be more of a tryout type of thing, get him used to the staff if he does need to catch in a big playoff game or something like that. So impressive numbers, a name that I'm keeping in mind for next year. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if he's the Astros everyday catcher next year. And with that kind of pop and minor league numbers, I would definitely be intrigued as a late catcher, if that's the case, to get a share of the Astros lineup there.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah, with, like you said, with the lineup, I believe he's played a little bit of first base as well. So maybe they'll try to sneak him in some at-bats, like you were saying, whether it's DH or spelling Gurriel out or something like that. So very interested there. I actually don't have it in front of me, Steve. I'm kind of curious what his plate discipline is, because we've been talking about it.
He had basically across, he had like a 16% strikeout rate and like a 7% walk rate.
Okay.
Across,
I mean, just that lowest strikeouts with that much power. I mean, if he does have the everyday role next year, I think that could be quite a sleeper that's climbing up the draft boards. I could even see that being worth kind of a gamble on like a top 10 catcher off the board if we know that he's kind of everyday catcher.
Doesn't walk much, but his highest strikeout rate has been the 17.8% in the 48 games at AAA. 219 plate appearances there. So good.
Yeah, that is very good. WRC plus 121 across AA and AAA. So yeah, I like it there. And then talk to me about this last one, Steve. So Jeremiah Estrada for the Chicago Cubs. Just seen some of the fastball highlights on the Twitter sphere. And it seems like this is kind of a relief specialist. Are you thinking that this might be kind of a stash and potential saves, or what do we think with Jeremiah Estrada here with the Cubs?
Yeah, I think this is a next year's save guy and just someone to go out and watch the highlights on Twitter from his first game. I think it was Tuesday night. Greg Jewett over at The Athletic, and he does the reliever recon. I'll plug that again over on Patreon. It's like $3 a month. He sends a daily email with like the breakdown of every single bullpen. It is absolutely amazing. I would definitely sign up for that. It's a great resource. He does a great job there. Not that we don't hear at Pitcher List too in the pen, Rick Graham, but shout out to Greg Jewett there as well. He put out a tweet about his outing, and you know, people in the Discord today were oohing and aahing over this guy's fastball. It's like one of the most impressive fastballs that I've seen. It's an 80 grade fastball, which is absolutely crazy. And it looks like it. It absolutely looks like it. On Fangraphs, it's just 50-55. I don't know where this tweet came. It was Brendan Miller, who covers the Cubs. But it's a ridiculous fastball. Look it up and watch the videos on Twitter.
Close to 100
with a ton of rise and move. This guy looks like a potential closer for years to come, so maybe just a guy to keep in mind. Or if not, he had a good fastball for a little bit in August and September 2022.
Yeah, there you go. That's why we're at the tail end of the August episode for Jeremiah Estrada. You know, hats off to those of you who have been with us this long throughout the season for this episode. So, Steve, I mean, we're kind of wrapped up here. Take us into your world a little bit. I know you're sweating on the home league. Are you 50% chance of advancing in your playoffs, or where are you at?
Yeah, I would say it's 50-50 now. I'm facing Patrick Sandoval. I'm watching him literally tear up the Yankees right now and shaking in my boots. But it's going to be close. I would say it's absolutely 50-50 right now for me to advance. But losing McClanahan was tough. When I saw that notification come up on my phone that he wasn't scratched, I'm like, oh my God. Like, I went through the stages like, okay, maybe they're just like pushing him back a day. Then I saw that he was warming up. It's like, all right, maybe he's sick. Then I saw the video of him like crying. I'm like, oh my God. Like, you know. And I mean, all things considered, like, it sounds like he'll be back after the minimum stay, which is amazing. But yeah, it's going to be tough for me to survive these this week and then the next week without him too. But we'll make up for it, at least on the starting pitching wise. I can try and scrape that together. Need my bats to start picking it up though too. But I'm a nervous Nelly over here for the matchup this week. I will definitely text you and keep you posted offline.
Yeah, keep me posted, man, and we'll keep at it here with all other things. Rest of the season, we're going to have some more actionable shows, but then I know we're looking forward to doing some of the recap shows on some of our predictions throughout the years. We love going back to the chalkboard and seeing what some of the picks were that Steve and I had for targets and fades. I might have to have a drink for that episode. But yeah, it's gonna be a lot of fun, man. And good luck the rest of the way to you. I've got a best ball league that I'm like right on the edge of third place, and second and first aren't out of the question. So I still got
nice.
Still got some skin in the game here, but yeah, overall, I'm pulling for you, Steve. So keep me posted on that, and hopefully all you guys are also in contention, but thanks so much for tuning in. Of course, like I said, you guys can hit us up on Twitter with any topics you want us to talk about at WinsAbovePod, or email the show at WinsAboveFantasy@gmail.com. But that's what we got for episode 71, Impact September Call-Ups. It has been a blast, as always. And Steve, great talking to you about baseball again, man.
Yeah, glad to have you back. It was a lot of fun. Thanks for talking baseball with us. Talk to you guys next week. Later.